This is Nightly Business Report with Bill Griffith and Sue Herrera.
Record run. The Nasdaq closes at an all-time high as the tech sector tries for its best year in a decade. Needing improvement. Home Depot's quarter was weaker than expected. Its outlook, not much better. But are the challenges temporary or something more? And breaking ground. Permits for new home construction hits a post-recession high. But it still might not be enough. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for this Tuesday, November 19th. And we do bid you a good evening, everybody, and welcome. Sue is off tonight. You know, it's been long everyone's favorite sector in the stock market, and lately it has once again been proving why. We're talking about technology stocks. The Nasdaq Composite, which is dominated by tech, closed at yet another record high today. It is now on track for its best year in a decade, as a matter of fact. The sector, as reflected by this ETF, is up more than 40% so far this year, and it's been helped by a 50% gain in semiconductor stocks and a double-digit rise in social media shares. As it happens, the Nasdaq was the only one of the market's three major indexes to finish higher today. The Dow fell by 102 points. We're back below 28,000. Nasdaq was up 20. The S&P fell by 1 point. Bob Pisani takes a closer look now at tech's big run.
The markets are clearly overbought, but there's not all that much worry out there, at least not yet. The major averages keep chugging away and hitting new highs almost every day. The S&P's been up 10 of 13 trading days this month, but the market technicians don't seem very concerned the market's getting too far ahead of itself. There's this fear of missing out. We call it FOMO down here, and that sparks some optimism about how we'll close out the year. That's another factor. So the technology stocks have been the big leaders in November, with the top 10 in particular having big gains way above the S&P 500. So, for example, just take a look. The S&P is up 3% in November. Seven of the largest tech stocks are doing even better than that. Apple's up 7%. Microsoft's up 5%. Only one tech name in the top 10, Cisco, is down on the month. You'd think that with all these big cap tech stocks moving so fast, there'd be some trepidation amongst market technicians. And everybody agrees the market's overbought, but nobody seems very worried about that. Some experts do expect to see some profit-taking eventually, particularly if these big-cap indexes keep pushing into record territory while the smaller-cap indexes are lagging a little bit. But the momentum doesn't appear to be fading, especially not while any of this trade optimism is persisting and some belief maybe global growth is bottoming now. So the world doesn't seem to be dwelling on all these issues. There's a chance this run could go on for a while. Craig Johnson from Piper Jaffray, he's the technician there. He says he views signs of overbought conditions as a validation of a breakout, not a sign of a breakdown. He expects we'll see that for some time before any correction takes hold. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
Elsewhere, new data shows that tech dominates the holdings of various mutual funds and hedge funds. According to analysis by Citigroup, Microsoft was the most widely held stock in mutual funds, followed by Alphabet and Facebook. This, by the way, was as of the end of the third quarter. And within the 50 largest hedge funds, Amazon was the most commonly owned name. Microsoft was tied for second. So how much longer can the technology juggernaut run? Joining us tonight is Paul Meeks. He's portfolio manager with Independent Solutions Wealth Management. Paul, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And you're actually a little cautious on tech right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I tried to be honest, Bill, with everybody. And the way I look at it, with the mega run we've had in some of these names, not every stock within the tech sector, but the bulk of them, particularly in these indices that are market cap weighted, which means the largest companies get the most weight and drive the indices more than any other names, they've really had, not recently, but all year long, some big runs. And so the way I look at it is folks should probably have a tech portfolio that is no more weighted, or sorry, an equity portfolio that's no more weighted to tech than the overall market. Right now, it's about 33%.
Right.
So if you look at your portfolio and it's more than a third dominated by these names, I think you should probably consider taking some profits.
Now, are you just talking about the big guys out there? I mean, technology, let's face it, is a very large umbrella. There are a number of sectors within that area. But I imagine you're focusing on the high-profile names that have done so well here. Is that the idea?
That's a very good point, Bill. So first of all, you have the tech sector, And then about a year ago, the S&P spun off Communications Services,
right,
which has other social media type names. And then you even have a couple of stocks like Amazon, for example. It's not in either of those sectors. It's in consumer discretionary. So you're absolutely right. Over time, these innovators have broadened, and the definition of tech is much broader than, you know, when you and I first spoke 20 years ago.
Thanks for the reminder. Are there groups within technology, though, right now that where you're seeing trends where there is real growth? And I don't want to, you know, give you any, I don't want to lead the witness here, but are you seeing any trends right now that you would invest in, technology-wise?
Yeah, it's a good question. So overall, I'm a little bit hesitant given the valuations. But at the outset, in your intro, you talked about semiconductors. And even though semiconductors have performed quite well, they came from a very low base because the semiconductor industry has really been in a funk for a couple of years. I think the semiconductor industry within the technology sector is going to be your best performer going forward. And so, yes, I do see there's some values there.
All right. Paul Meeks, who doesn't seem to age in the last 20 years, with Independent Solutions Wealth Management. Thanks for joining us again tonight, Paul.
See ya.
Now, while tech has been one pillar of the market, retail has been another. But today, it had a pretty rough day. Let's start with Home Depot. The world's largest home improvement retailer cut its sales forecast and said that it expects same-store sales to be lower than expected this year. That sent that stock lower by about 5%, and it was largely responsible for the Dow's decline today, as a matter of fact. Then there's Kohl's, the big box retailer's third quarter earnings and sales missed analyst estimates, and the company trimmed its profit outlook, and that sent shares of Kohl's down more than 19%. Now, anytime there's a retail wreck like this, one of the concerns is that consumer spending may be slowing, which would be problematic for the economy, especially ahead of the holiday shopping season. So we asked Courtney Reagan to dig a little bit deeper for us.
Both Home Depot and Kohl's reported disappointing sales and lowered full-year forecasts. I spoke to Home Depot's new CFO, Richard McPhail, who said, quote, "We are absolutely not seeing softness with the consumer. We think the consumer is healthy and the housing environment is healthy and stable." McPhail said the lowered guidance is only a reflection that it's, quote, "taking our time to roll out the new initiatives." He said Home Depot is already getting about a half a point of comparable sales increase as a result of some of those initiatives, like its new website for pro customers. But it's had to roll out that site's features more slowly than previously planned. Meantime, Kohl's comparable sales grew slightly after falling 3% in the first half of the year, but gross margin fell. CEO Michelle Goss told me on the phone, quote, "I am absolutely convicted that we will return this business to profitable growth," though Kohl's hasn't officially laid out 2020 guidance. Goss said Kohl's cut prices in the quarter because, quote, "very warm temperatures hurt sales of cold weather goods and a competitive environment that intensified." Goss said that Kohl's stands for value, so it needed to lower guidance to give it room to make necessary improvements for the holiday season to increase current customer loyalty and capture new shoppers. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan.
Now, it was a different story for TJX Companies. The off-price retailer beat earnings and revenue estimates and raised its full-year profit forecast. Company said that steep discounts brought in more shoppers, and that made that stock a little more expensive. It was rising more than 1.5% in today's session. So what are the mixed retail earnings results telling us about the consumer right now? Joining us at this moment, Joel Bynes, co-head of the retail practice at Alex Partners. Joel, good to see you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
You know, the consumer has been so strong, the job market is so strong, that we wring our hands at any sign that there might be a slowdown at some point. Are you seeing that at all at this point?
I think what's important is to separate expectations from consumer behavior. And so what happened today was expectation realignment. If you look at Home Depot and even Kohl's, their sales actually increased. They just didn't increase by as much as the street was hoping for. So from the perspective of the question, is the consumer healthy and is the consumer shopping? The answer is definitively yes. From the question of, did we have appropriate expectations for how much business was going to go to an individual retailer versus another retailer? Maybe we were off a little bit on that, and that's what you're seeing in the stock prices today.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I heard Terry Lundgren, the former CEO of Macy's, speak, and he said it was his belief that there are too many retailers out there, that we might have 20% more retail capacity than we need in this country right now, and you need to see that come back to achieve some sort of balance in this industry. What do you think?
It's an interesting idea of how you would put a number to how much overcapacity there is. I guess the best way to think about the overcapacity in the retail business now is the flow of goods from, for example, a full-price department store down to an off-price value play. And there's sufficient merchandise in that supply chain moving from the full-price department store environment into the off-price environment that would lead you to believe that there is overcapacity. I think it's a little tricky to quantify it.
Right.
And then I think the other element is whether you're talking about offline capacity, i.e. stores that we drive to and make purchases in, or whether you're talking about online capacity, which is in some ways almost limitless because there isn't any real estate involved. So it depends on how you want to come at the question.
Before I let you go, where do you see opportunity in retail right now? What do you like?
Well, consumers always like a deal, so there's definitely opportunity in the value sector for sure. The other thing that we're looking at is we're looking at the rental sector. Now, there's not a lot of public plays in that market right now, but that's a place I'd be looking.
All right. Joel Bynes with Alex Partners. Again, thanks for joining us tonight, Joel.
Thanks so much, Bill.
Time to take a look at some of today's upgrades and downgrades. We begin with a couple of sells. AT&T was downgraded to sell at Moffitt Nathanson. The analyst is questioning the company's optimistic three-year guidance and wondering how it can be achieved. Price target is $30. That stock fell 4% to $38 even. MSG Networks was downgraded to sell from neutral at Guggenheim Securities. The analyst cited upcoming key contract renewals. Price target there, $15. That stock fell 3% to $17.90. Broadcom, though, was upgraded today to overweight from equal weight at Morgan Stanley. The analyst cited increased confidence in that company's software strategy. Price target now $367. That stock rose 2% to $317.70. Still ahead, healthy prognosis. After lagging the market, healthcare is making a comeback, and the outlook could be just what long-term investors are looking for. The president of the New York Fed said today that he's monitoring the risks to the economy. John Williams cited several challenges, including slower global growth, trade uncertainties, and muted inflation pressures. In fact, he said those factors together are starting to slow growth in the U.S., but he added that the Fed's three interest rate cuts since July have helped sustain economic growth in our country. And, of course, those lower interest rates have pushed mortgage rates down, helping the housing market. A new report says that both home building and permits for future home construction surged last month. But as Diana Olick reports, that's not going to solve all of the housing market's issues.
Home builders are bullish this fall, starting more single and multifamily homes and pushing construction activity to the highest level in over a decade. Unfortunately, it's still not enough.
Single-family housing starts have improved over the course of 2019, but it's important to keep in mind we're building about 900,000 single-family homes a year, and we need about 1 to 1.1 million based on population growth.
The market doesn't just need more houses, it needs more inexpensive starter homes. Builders are slowly starting to move in that direction, but they still face heavy headwinds.
Higher regulatory costs continue to be a barrier. Land prices are higher. And we need to build with more density.
Townhomes are the answer to the density problem. There has been some improvement there over the last few years, but recently townhome construction has flattened and sits at about 13% of the new home market. Multifamily construction continues to boom and contributed most to the jump in overall housing starts and permits in October. But the bulk of that construction is still on the higher end of the market. Builders are also seeing more of their products swept up by investors as single-family rental demand soars and rent prices rise right along with it. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Also in Washington, as expected, the House today passed a short-term spending bill that would avert a government shutdown on Friday. The continuing resolution would keep the government running through December 20th. It now heads to the Senate, where it is also expected to pass. President Trump today threatened higher tariffs on Chinese goods if no trade deal is reached anytime soon. The comments came during a meeting with the president's cabinet.
I have a good relationship with China. We'll see what happens. But I'm very happy right now. And if we don't make a deal with China, I'll just raise the tariffs even higher. Thank you very much.
Now, since the U.S. and China agreed in principle to phase one of a deal last month, Beijing and Washington have been sending mixed signals about what comes next. Now to Hong Kong, where the protests there are still going strong. There was a new development today that has the business community concerned that Hong Kong could lose its position as an international financial hub. Eunice Yoon has the story for us tonight from Beijing.
The move is being described as the potential death knell to Hong Kong's rule of law. As part of the UK's deal to hand over Hong Kong back to mainland China, China agreed to maintain the city's independent legal system for 50 years. But today, China's legislature, the National People's Congress, threatened to overturn a ruling by Hong Kong's High Court and said Beijing has ultimate say over the city's laws. The High Court had declared a face mask ban that the Hong Kong authorities have been using to control the protests unconstitutional. The move is being seen as a big step towards undermining Hong Kong's separate status from mainland China. I spoke with a lawyer who consults foreign companies, and he said more businesses are reducing their Hong Kong footprint, and few, if any, new ones are going in. He also said more people are leaving Hong Kong for other countries and have a plan B. Business associations have also voiced their concerns about damage to the rule of law and expect companies to reassess their plans. The next date to watch is November 24th, when Hong Kong holds its local elections. People are watching for any signs of Beijing interference. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Eunice Yoon in Beijing.
Boeing may need to redesign 7,000 jets, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. That recommendation by regulators has nothing to do with the 737 MAX. Instead, it stems from the investigation into a fan blade that broke off, killing one passenger on a Southwest flight last year. Boeing said that it plans to revamp parts of that 737 NG jet. As a result, the stock fell just a fraction today to 367 even. California utility PG&E is reportedly nearing a settlement with state regulators over the maintenance failure of equipment involved in the 2017 wildfires there. According to Bloomberg, the deal is valued at a little over $1.7 billion, and shares of the bankrupt utility fell about 3.5% today to $6.84. Alibaba has reportedly stopped taking orders from investors for its secondary offering in Hong Kong earlier than expected. Reuters reports that the number of shares investors are asking for far exceeds what the e-commerce giant can offer. The current stock rose a fraction today to $185.25. And the medicines company has reportedly attracted takeover interest, including from Novartis. According to Bloomberg, Novartis is conducting due diligence on the biotech firm for a possible purchase to help grow the drug maker's heart medicine business unit. The report helped the medicine company shares spike almost 20% today to 70.21. And Merck announced that it's going to be raising its quarterly dividend by nearly 11% for next year's first quarter. Based on the current stock price, Merck's yield would then be greater than that of the S&P 500. That stock was up a fraction today to 84.65. Now to another market sector that has been a pillar of our economy, healthcare. The group is up about 13% so far this year, but has underperformed the S&P overall, which has gained roughly 25%. Just in the past month, though, healthcare stocks have been outperforming the broader market. Damian Conover is equity analyst at Morningstar. He joins us to talk about this pillar of the economy. And I think about the monthly jobs report, where often you'll see healthcare near the top of the hiring. I mean, it has just been a consistent performer overall, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it really has been. When we think about healthcare, it's really a sector that tends to perform well regardless of how the economy is doing. But in a backdrop of a strong economy, healthcare can continue to do very well. And even though it has relatively products that people buy when the economy is doing poorly or doing well. When you do have a strong economy, that just further helps the healthcare sector.
But you do divide it into sort of two categories, drugs and therapies and things, and medical devices as well, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So when looking at the healthcare sector going forward, you know, will the recent performance we've seen continue? I think it differs by different parts of the healthcare sector. And like you mentioned, there's two big buckets. You have sort of the drug and biotech bucket, and then you have the device and tool company bucket. And what we're seeing at Morningstar is the firms in the drug and biotech bucket look significantly undervalued, largely because of concerns around U.S. policy reform that might put some pressure on drug prices. But we don't think that is warranted to the level of what the stocks are trading at. And we think there's a lot of upside for these stocks.
What about the other bucket? How do you see them going?
Yeah, so the other bucket is, we think, a little bit overvalued. And we think what's happened is the market has gotten, I think, conservative in their allocation to healthcare around drug and biotech stocks. And wanting to still have exposure to healthcare, there's been an increased allocation to devices and tool companies. And even though the fundamentals of devices and tool companies are very good within the healthcare subsector, the over-allocation there, sort of hiding from the drug and biotech sector, has left the other parts of the healthcare a little bit overvalued. And we think investors should be a little bit more concerned and a little more cautious around those sub-industries.
Very good. Damian Conover with Morningstar. Again, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And coming up, an easy way for the government to collect $1 trillion more in tax revenue. Here's what we're watching for tomorrow. More earnings from retailers. Target reports in the morning as investors get more insights into the retail sector and the consumer. The Federal Reserve releases the minutes of its most recent meeting when policymakers lowered interest rates again. And President Trump is going to tour an Apple facility in Austin, Texas with CEO Tim Cook. That's what we're watching for on Wednesday. Meantime, thousands of Disney Plus accounts have already been hacked. Owners were locked out of their user accounts and login credentials were changed. In some cases, they were also sold online for as little as $3. Disney Plus made its debut just last week and signed up more than 10 million customers in the first 24 hours alone. The company assured everyone that it takes the privacy and security of user data very seriously. WeWork is reportedly being investigated by the New York State Attorney General. According to Reuters, officials are focused on whether the company's co-founder and former CEO indulged in self-dealing. He was widely reported to have personally bought properties and then leased them back to the company. WeWork says it's cooperating with the matter. It is expected to announce big layoffs later this week. And the New York Attorney General's office also has its sights set on Juul. It is suing the e-cigarette maker for alleged deceptive marketing tactics that targeted teens, something that Letitia James says contributed to the rising vaping crisis.
There is no doubt that Juul, the largest e-cigarette company, has caused this addiction. In fact, they hold 70% of the market. And that's why today we are taking action by announcing a comprehensive lawsuit against Juul Labs Incorporated.
Finally tonight, more on the great tax debate. There's been a lot of talk lately about increasing taxes on the wealthy to raise revenue for various social programs. But some say there's a simpler way. Just collect what's already owed. Robert Frank takes a look at closing the so-called tax gap.
Every year, the IRS collects less than what it's theoretically owed, a difference known as the tax gap. New IRS data shows the tax gap at around $400 billion a year, or about 15% of the nation's total tax revenues. Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary who opposes a wealth tax, says the best way to reform the tax system is to start with basic collection. In a new paper and op-ed with economist Natasha Sarin, Summers projected that the tax gap will grow to over $7.5 trillion over the next decade. At least 70% of those uncollected taxes come from underpayment by the top 1%, which he says contributes to legitimate concerns that the tax system unfairly advantages the elite. Audits of the wealthy have fallen by more than half over the past decade as the IRS cuts staff. In 2011, more than 12% of those making more than $1 million a year were audited. Today, it's 3%. Some are set investing $100 billion in stronger enforcement, better technology, and improved third-party reporting would yield over $1 trillion in revenue, generating $11 for every single tax dollar spent. Now, politicians on both sides say they agree that more enforcement would be better, but Congress has yet to allocate what many say is adequate funding.
The OECD says the United States has one of the most progressive tax codes in the world when it comes to collection from the rich. So we're collecting from the rich, we're just not enforcing all of the collection we could be doing. Again, this is a resources problem. Congress needs to get its act together and put money there.
Now, the Treasury Department saying in a statement to CNBC that, quote, the administration agrees that reducing the tax gap is an important goal. It wants Congress to approve measures in the next budget that would improve enforcement and oversight. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
And before we go, one final look at the day on Wall Street. The Dow was down about 100 points today. Blame Home Depot. NASDAQ was up 20. That's a record. S&P was down just one. That is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Bill Griffith. Thanks again for watching, everybody. Have a great evening. See you tomorrow.